Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Central Depository Services (India) Limited conference call. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal the operator by pressing star then zero on your touch-tone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Nilesh Kittur from Central Depository Services (India) Limited. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Good morning and warm welcome to the participants of the conference call of Central Depository Services (India) Limited. From CDSL management team, we have Mr. Sunil Alvares, who is the MD and CEO of CDSL Ventures Limited. Mr. Girish Amesara.
Sorry to interrupt. Sir, we are not able to hear you clearly.
Are you able to hear me now?
Yes, much better. Thank you.
Good morning. Warm welcome to CDSL conference call. From CDSL management side, we have Mr. Sunil Alvares, who is the MD and CEO of CDSL Ventures Limited. Mr. Girish Amesara, who is the Chief Financial Officer of CDSL. And Mr. Ram Kumar, who is the Head of Business Development and Operations from CDSL side. I now, since this will be an interactive discussion, I request the operator to unmute the line of lines of participants so that they can interact.
Participants, your lines are now placed in the talk mode.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
This is Sanjay from Pinebridge Investments. Hi, sir. Thank you very much for taking time out for the call. We have been shareholders in CDSL for the last more than 1 year. We bought after COVID. And of course, it's done very well for us. And first of all, I would like to thank the management for an excellent execution, over the last year or so. I mean, even before, but last year, it's probably the fruits came in. That's it. We've been happy shareholders for the last 1 year. And, while I know the business reasonably okay, I've been following your conference calls, I've read all your annual reports, CRD, RHP, etc. But unfortunately, we've never been able to interact directly. And, I thought, given that we hold the stock and it's a decent position for our fund, especially after the move. And hence, we thought, let me spend some time to probably get to know the mechanics or the nitty-gritty of the company better. So what I'll do is I'll start straight away, from the different businesses which we have, and then probably, and see what questions, I'll tell you my questions, and we can go forward from there. Is that fine with you?
Yes, that is fine.
Yeah. So, we'll start with our annual issuer charges or the custodian business, which is there. So I just wanted to know, I know that, there is a rate based on the, net worth or, of a company, and, the minimum is rupees 9,000 and the maximum is rupees 75,000. For companies that are listed, it is based on number of folios, or if the amount is more than 75,000, it is based on number of folios. Now, when I look at, some of the large companies with a large retail base, say a Reliance, say a Yes Bank, for example, Yes Bank probably has the highest number of retail shareholders at around 35 lakhs. So is it fair to assume that Yes Bank would pay 35 lakhs into 11 rupees to around 3.7 crores or 3.8 crores to either CDSL, mix of CDSL and NSDL? Is that the right understanding?
That's right understanding.
There would be some physical shareholder that would be paid to the RTA, but apart from that, whatever is in the DMAT would be paid to the deposit.
Okay. So if I go by that, sir, even CDSL, for example, has, I think, 1.5 lakh shareholders. The CDSL would be paying 15 lakhs to, I don't know, itself or NSDL or whatever. So this means the bulk of the revenue which you get, I think you have around 88 crore revenue in FY21 from the annual issuer charges. So the bulk of this revenue comes only from listed companies. Is that a fair understanding?
Yeah, yes, it's a fair understanding. Because unless there are folios, it will be capital based.
Correct. Now, I think I looked at NSDL numbers also. I think NSDL has around, at least FY20, I couldn't see FY21 numbers, the quarterly. I have seen the annual report of FY20. They also make around, 120 crores or 110 crores from this annual issuer charges. Is this understanding right?
Right now, I will not be able to comment on the NSDL numbers.
Okay. But they would be similar, right? What do you do from annual issuer charges? I mean, it's not like they would be very low or very high.
It depends on how many folios they have, na? Because
I got you.
More active folios, then they could be having a larger number of lower number of income, depending on the number of
them. Okay. Now, typically, how does this work? Every company would pay both NSDL and CSDL, right? Because CDSL, right? Because either CDSL would have the folios. I mean, some folios CDSL would have, some folios NSDL would have, right? So every company pays to both of them, right? It's not like any company can pay to only one of them. How does this work?
Yeah, that's it. The company has to admit its the shares on, if it's a listed company, it's mandatory to admit on both the depositories. If it is not a listed company, then it has a choice to either admit it on one or both.
Yeah, I'm talking about listed companies.
Yeah, so if it is a listed company, then it is admitted on both, and then those fees have to be paid to both depositories.
Okay. So basically, if the market share in the annual issuer charges business is a function of number of beneficiary accounts you have, right?
Yeah, you can say that in a way.
Because even if somebody has one share or somebody has 1 lakh share, he will pay the same 11 rupees, right?
That's right. Yeah.
So it doesn't matter who has more quantity, who has more number of beneficiary accounts. Is that a fair understanding, right?
Yeah, you could say so.
Okay. Fine. So basically, for the listed companies, there is nothing you can do, right? I mean, it's the number of folios into 11 rupees you will get. There's nothing to increase your share or nothing. The only way to increase share in the annual issuer charges business in the listed space is to have more beneficiary accounts.
Yeah, more beneficiary accounts with more active eyes in them.
Active in the sense, what would you mean by that? That would come in transaction, right? The more number of trades you do, will get more money.
Like this, if somebody opens a DMAT account, that's not enough for us. He needs to transact and he has to take credit of a security. Only after that will I get the eyes in charge.
Got you. Yeah, if it's just a DMAT account and he just buys one IPO in a year, then it doesn't make sense. That point I get. Now, one more thing is the folios will keep on changing, right? Every day you will have X number of folios, NSDL will have Y number of folios. So, is the annual issuer pay, charges paid on a cutoff date?
Yes, it is on 31st March.
It is the average folios across the year, but as of 31st March, we take the average folios for the year, for each of the ISINs. That is issued by the company.
Okay. Got you. Okay, fine. I got a sense of this. Now, coming to the transaction charges, you have done a fabulous job. I mean, again, congratulations to that on the number of beneficiary accounts, the way it has increased for TDSL across all, retail brokerages.
Hello.
Can you please proceed?
Yeah. So, I said congratulations on the great number of beneficiary account increase. I think you've done a great job on that front. Now, while I understand that, you have probably the sole depository, for Zerodha or Upstox or some of these new age brokerage accounts. But what have you done to get this? I'm not very sure. Is there anything apart from marketing or account management? Because the rates are same largely, right? I mean, the 4.5 rupees or 5 rupees, that as per the block, that is same. So there is no difference in transaction charges. So what, if you can take some time out and make me understand, how has CDSL been able to gain such a disproportionate share of the new age, overall number of retail accounts?
Actually, Mr. Sanjay, what you are asking is for our internal strategies which we do not discuss in a public domain. So, I would request you.
No, I don't want any details. I mean, if you can just give me roughly, that is it because of your systems are better or is it your charges are better? I mean, I don't want what is the exact charge or
the charges are. The charges are there in the public domain. The systems in terms of services are there in the public domain. So that beyond that, we really do not discuss on how we get in more accounts.
Sir, if you can give me some, what is the difference between NSDL and CDSL? I mean, I don't want your strategy, but something which is understandable or, if I'm Zerodha, what is the difference between NSDL and CDSL? Something on that front. I don't want your something which is very pertinent to organization, but something which is probably anybody who knows the business well would understand.
No, typically if you put both depositories, you could say they are almost the same, and there's no difference. They offer the same set of services which are permitted by the Depositories Act, and so do we. In terms of our charges, it is a published rate so far as our transaction charges are concerned. And so far as the annual issuer charges are concerned, those two are published charges and they are again, controlled by SEBI. So there's no hardly any difference between us. We are almost the same. So it's more in terms of the, the comfort level is what people have with us, and that's what's giving us more.
Is it something also? Let me understand this from a broker's perspective. So if CDSL, let's say, with a Zerodha, is there any reason or what will trigger a Zerodha to move from CDSL to NSDL? There's nothing, right? I mean, the service quality, service level, everything is more or less same, right? So what can trigger a broker to move from one depository to another?
No, that's again on the broker's comfort level. And at the end of the day, tomorrow, if he decides he wants to split his risk among the two depositories, he may decide to have his accounts in both places. So that's a call the broker ultimately takes.
But typically, these large brokers have only with one guy, right? I mean, Zerodha and Upstox would only have with you, right? Or do they have with both the people?
Historically, most of the large brokers, the earlier large brokers like Kotak and had with both, And however, with the new age brokerages have it, with only one deposit.
Okay. I think I have my demat account with ICICI Direct. I think ICICI Direct is with NSDL, if I'm not wrong. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong.
No, they have it both right now.
Okay. So is it also a function of you targeted the retail accounts more aggressively than probably your competition? That seems to be the most logical answer.
We really won't be able to come in because we don't know what NSDL is going to target retail customers. It's a question which we really do not have. Our business is such that whatever efforts are taken by NSDL will not be reflected in NSDL's efforts, but ultimately it will reflect in the efforts of the DP. So we really don't know who's doing what. So that's a very, unique thing to our business.
Okay. Now, when I look at, some basic maths, So when I look at your transaction charges and divide by number of average accounts you have across a year, you know, for many years it was this around 25 rupees roughly per account, you know, and that has jumped to 44 rupees in FY21, which is understandable, you know, because there are higher number of retail trading increased during lockdown, and you know, it's understandable why it has moved up. What I wanted to know is, you know, let's say of your 4 crore beneficiary accounts, is there something you have that, you know, definition? I think CDSL in its annual report gives some definition of active and inactive or something. So out of these 4 crore beneficiary accounts, is there any way you define what is active and what is inactive? Maybe, you know, some people who trade once in a quarter or people who trade, you know, once in a year or something. Any color you want to give on that 4 crore beneficiary accounts?
Typically, we define these people who are active, who has investors who have some ISIN in their account.
Sorry, some?
Some ISIN in their account.
Some share, basically.
Some share in their account.
Okay. Even if it doesn't trade for 1 year, as for you, it's the active account.
Yeah, yeah. Basically, we look at it as an active account.
Okay. Okay. Now I understand that, you know, there's nothing that you can do to make a, you know, I mean, that's the job of a broker or DP, whatever you say, for a retail, for a participant to trade more or have more shares in his account. That's not your job. You have created an infrastructure, and that is what for the broker and the depository to use. Do you see, I mean, I don't know how to frame it, but do you see this trend, you know, increasing in terms of, you know, more retail trades based on your, you know, activity that you're seeing in your this thing, or do you see it's more one-off or anything you can give your share your thoughts on the thing?
Honestly, it's a forward-looking statement and we would not like to comment on that.
Okay. So this then, you know, there's one more thing I wanted to ask is you know, I was looking at all the brokerage numbers, you know. Unfortunately, this is not a this thing where I can share the data with you. Just a second. So you know, if I look at, let's say I'll give you a number. Let's say first FY21, right? So FY21, if I add up all the accounts of Zerodha, Upstox, Angel, ICICI, 5paisa, HDFC, all the names, you know, Religare, Paytm, stuff like that. Now that number of accounts was around 1.9 crores, 19 million, right? The same number was around 11 million. So 11 million to 19 million from FY20 to FY21. So addition of around 8 million accounts, which happened with all the brokers. Whereas when I see your number from FY20 to FY21, you have added 12 million accounts. So all the brokers put together, I mean all the known brokers that we have added 8 million accounts and you have added 12 million accounts. Assuming you have 100% market share with all of them, which is probably not the case, you know, so where does this extra number come from? Is it from, I mean, I don't know. Can you just throw some light on this? And same thing has happened in June quarter. So June quarter from March 21, all the brokers have added 3.5 million accounts and you have added 6.3 million accounts. So I'm not able to reconcile this.
See, we are, it's not only brokers, we also have banks who are our depository participants. So it's what you would have taken are just the top 10 and added that. But we have close to 600 depository participants. So I'm sure each one adding his own number will at the end of the day contribute substantially at the end of the quarter or end of the year. So that's how it actually works.
Okay. Are there, let's see, do you see any consolidation happening in terms of, you know, smaller brokerages folding up and, you know, larger brokerages like, you know, the new age ones increasing, or do you think because of the strong participation of retail in the market, even small brokers are opening up?
No, as so far as consolidation is concerned, it's again a forward-looking statement. I cannot comment on that. So far has smaller brokers contributing? Yes, all DPs of CDSL contribute at the end of the day in their own little way so far as adding accounts is concerned.
No, I'm not asking a forward-looking statement, sir. What I'm trying to ask is...
No, you're asking whether they will get consolidated smaller
brokers. No, okay, let me rephrase the question.
Yeah.
Last 2 years or last 18 months, your market share, not market share, the market share of the number of top brokers, let's say the big brokers, has in your beneficiary account, has it increased or has it decreased or has it remained the same?
It's increased.
So that's what I'm trying to seek. Is there a trend of increasing, which is obvious to understand, but I was just...
No, if he's a large broker, obviously, based on his scale of operations, all large brokers' market share would have increased, which would have, at the end of the day, added to our overall market share. So if you see on a scale of 100, if a small broker is giving me 1% and a large broker is giving me 10%, so tomorrow, even if has the market share increases, his share will increase according to his earlier share of 10.
Correct.
That's how it works.
Correct. So this is and one more thing on the transaction charges business. Is technology a big difference between you and the competitor, or is it more or less same from a broker perspective? Or is technology a big component here? I mean, I don't know how localized servers or something is something which you have been able to create a moat, or you've been able to create something, from a technology perspective?
No, not really. It's almost the same, is it?
Okay. And the pledging thing is also part of the transaction charges, right? Which pledging charges?
I'd ask, request Mr. Girish if you can answer that.
Pledging is part of transaction charge.
Okay. And how much was the total pledging, sir, if you have the number in FY21?
Just a moment.
You
want full FY21 number of pledge, right?
Pledge charges. Revenue per pledge.
It was pledge revenue was around 7 crore in financial year 2021.
Okay. And this is mostly in the second half because the rule came in the second half.
Yes, it came from August 2020. So August 2020 and September were starting point of this charge.
Okay. Now on the IPO business, I understand that, IPO and the corporate action charges business, I understand that it's a function of number of IPOs happening in the market. But again, can you help us understand that, and I did my rough numbers, and correct me if I'm wrong, it is roughly between 75-80 lakhs per IPO you get. Is it a fair understanding? I've just did the number of IPOs every quarter and the revenue from IPOs. Is that a right way of doing it?
No, that's not a correct way of doing it, because the IPOs are charged on the number of folios we process.
Okay. So, is that data public? How much you get per folio process?
Yeah. Yes, sir. It is public. It is 10 rupees per folio.
10 rupees per folio.
Okay.
So, basically, sir, actually, if you want to do this analysis, you should take the number of applications, which is already available in the public domain. So, one IPO is not same as another in terms of number of applications. So, that should be tagged for your calculation.
So that's what I wanted to know, whether it is based on number of applications or this is based on number of people who actually get the share.
No, actually get the share. Not based on number of applications, but people who actually get the share, which is also available in the public domain.
Okay, it's not an application. It's on number of people.
No, it's not an application. It's on the number of people who are successful allotting.
So if you see the basis of allotment, you'll get a fair idea. So those basis of allotments are available with these topics.
Correct.
Okay.
You get an ad, you know, as per the rules, no? The company is supposed to put an ad in the newspapers after the basic development is finalized. So you can pick up the number from there.
Yes, sir. I got it, sir. Thank you, sir, on this. So again, the function of how much money or how much market share you get in this business is a function of number of beneficiary accounts, right? It's same like annual issuer charges, right?
You can say overall subset, yes.
Yeah. I mean, number of active beneficiary accounts or whatever way you can say. But the more number you have, because typically this will be more from retail, right? I mean, and hence the more number of people apply the and get the allotment, you will get more money, and that is a function of how much market share you have with the retail participants. That's the right understanding, right?
That would be a logical answer.
Okay. Now, you know, I don't know whether you can recall or not, in June quarter 2020, which is, you know, April, May, June 2020, peak of COVID, you know, there was no IPO in in that quarter. But still you had a revenue of 5 crore from this IPO and transaction, corporate action charges. Was there anything meaning something big happened? Because without any IPO, you still had a 5 crore revenue. Can you recall or?
When we say IPO, corporate actions, it could be IPOs coming in or corporate actions from existing companies. So it could be those charges as well. So right now we cannot recall, but could be either or.
So corporate action means?
Corporate action could be a bonus, rights, anything of those things which would have come out during that period. So at that point in time, the corporate action charge would have kicked in. And again, the same charge of 10 rupees for corporate action.
Okay. Fair point. This large business, which is the big part of your revenues and which has increased very well, is this KYC and online data charges. And my understanding of this business is very limited, as we try to understand this better. Can you please explain that, you mentioned, I think you have some 3 crore KYC records. Now, how do you get these records? How will you increase the number of records? Who is the competition in this business? Is it same only you and NSDL, or there's somebody more? Who are the customers? Is it only AMC and brokerages, or is it more? And personally, as a consumer, I've never used this, online KYC. So if you can just touch upon this business, how does the mechanics of this business work? Who is the competition? Who is the customer? What are the charges? How do you increase the number of records which you have? If you can give a 5-minute overview on this.
Yeah, see, basically, the KYC in India is regulated by SEBI through the KRA regulations of 2011. And all entities who wish to open any account in the securities market are required to do a KYC first and then open a DMAT, broking, or whatever account they want to open post that. In 2015, there was this CKYC regulations which have come as well, where you need to do the KYC centrally. So currently, investors are required to do KYC both with CKYC as well as with the KRA. So far as the KRA is concerned, there are 5 players in the market, and these 5 players are CDSL Ventures Limited, NDML, that is the subsidiary.
Sorry, what is it?
CDSL Ventures Limited, NSDL Data Management Limited, the subsidiary of NSDL.
Okay.
And we have CAM, Stargi, and NSE.x.
NSE.x.
Yeah.
Okay.
So far as the what volumes are handled by each of these entities, these figures are not public. But since we were the first player in the market, we assume that we have an over 50% market share in this business. And
what do you mean by 50% market share? Number of people who are fetching data from you?
No. We mean that number of KYC records created with us.
Okay.
The total number of KYC records created in the market, we have about 50% market share more than 50% market share so far as the records are concerned. Point number two is that how do we add to these numbers? So typically you have all these intermediaries who open DMAT accounts. Okay, so many of these intermediaries do their KYC through CVL. That's how the records go up. Secondly, we also have mutual funds who also add their customer KYC to our record. So that's how the number of records goes up.
Okay.
So far as the charges are concerned, we charge 35 rupees if somebody fetches an existing KYC and rupees 20 if he creates a KYC. There are no other charges apart from these two charges.
Okay. So basically, it is not like your person going and getting the KYC done. It is, let's say, today I am I want to open a mutual fund account, then I go and say I want to open an account. He will say you have to do a KYC, and then he will take all the records and probably upload in your website and all the way it is done. And that's how you get the record, right?
That's right. Yeah.
And then once you get the record, anybody else can fetch it.
That's right.
So when the mutual fund guy opens his account, he will first try and find out whether I already have a KRA done or whatever. Is it right?
That's right. That's right.
Okay. And what is the difference between KRA and EKYC? When do you need a KRA? When do you need a EKYC?
No, you have to do CKYC. What has happened is first the KRA regulations came and we've been following a certain protocol so far as data, etc. is being stored. Then the CKYC came, okay. So far as their records are concerned, they do not verify the records. So far as the securities market is concerned, they are still comfortable using the KRA records. And obviously, they are also required to upload it in the CKYC as of now.
So who uses the CKYC data?
Basically, CKYC Cayman has a common database for all banks, insurance companies, the entire financial markets, okay, and that included all the banks, etc., who could upload their data into the CKYC, whereas KRA is specifically for the securities market.
Okay, so you also get revenues from the CKYC, no?
No, we have nothing to do with the CKYC.
Okay, so you do only KRA, which is as so I'm trying to just understand it and again correct me if I'm wrong. So basically, this 2011, there is this SEBI regulation came on this KRA that anybody who opens up an account in the financial markets needs to have a KRA done. And because you were the first mover, you have more number of records there, 50% of records. And today, because it is mandatory, so whenever somebody opens up either a mutual fund or a brokerage, these are only two, I think, relevant.
Yeah, broking and DMAT.
Broking DMAT and this thing, also
that's
the right. Mutual fund, right?
That's right.
Okay, so then he will either fetch the data and he will get the money, 35 rupees, or if there is no data, then he will create the data and pay you 20 rupees for data creation, and then that record gets added to your accounts, and later on if somebody wants to fetch it, you have to pay 35 rupees. But CKYC is used for by all other participants, like let's say telecom. Let's say today I want to do a open account with Airtel, then KRA is not involved, then CKYC is involved, right?
That's right, yeah.
Okay, and who gets the money for CKYC? There are some different participants for CKYC?
There is a company called CERSAI.
Sorry?
There is a company called CERSAI. C-E-R-S-A-I.
C-E-R-S-A-I.
Yeah, okay. So they have been appointed by the government to handle CKYC.
Okay, but is there any difference between CKYC and KRA? Is it just like because there are two regulatory bodies and hence there are two different rules?
There are certain differences in the way we handle the KYC. We do a verification, whereas CERSAI does not do a verification of the data. So that is the most important thing between us and CERSAI.
Who does the verification? You do the verification or the guy who opens the account does the verification?
Actually, both do it. The guy who opens the intermediary who opens the account does a thorough verification. Post that, when the images come to us, we verify the data with the images again.
Okay. Now, so from what I understand is there a possible risk that tomorrow the government says, you know, these two separate things are happening. There should be only one CKYC, which is more, seems to be more prevalent. Do you see anything of that sort? I mean, risk, or how do you see risk in this business?
See, again, it's a forward-looking question. I cannot really answer that. But there have been talks earlier that there could be CKYC could be the only agency for all practical purposes. That sort has been hanging on our head since the last 5 years.
Okay. Got it. In this, is there any play of this? This SANSA is within a government body, right? This, whatever
right.
You said. This.
That's right. Yeah.
Okay. So, is there any play that DigiLocker does in this whole thing?
No, DigiLocker has no role to play.
Okay, and how much does SANSA charge for fetching account?
They charge 1 rupee for every transaction. So every time you upload, you make any changes, you fetch, every transaction you do, you keep on paying 1 or 2.
And typically everybody else, like telecom companies and all, they use CKYC, right?
They use both. They have to use both right now. As per law.
No, telecom companies also use KRA?
No, not telecom. I'm talking about the securities market part. We are particularly talking about securities market participation.
Okay. So, security market participation, so when I open up an account, he would fetch the data from both, or he would only create the data for both?
Typically, you would fetch it from the KRA first.
You fetch it from the KRA, but when you create the data, you give it to both CKYC as well as KRA, right?
See, the difference between us, KRA and the CKYC is all our records are indexed on an investor's PAN. Okay. Whereas, the PAN is not a mandatory field in the CKYC. So that is why investors will first verify here the KYC is done, fetch it, and then move ahead.
Okay, that is very important that you have the PAN and you don't have the PAN. Okay. And, just quickly on some of the other things, smaller things which I don't know fully well, I'll just ask you, what is this user facility charges revenue in the line item?
It's basically what we charge as software fees as well as connectivity charges, etc. to the depository participant. So every depository participant, we charge them a software, annual software fee of 40,000, and there is some connectivity charges based on, so all that comes as user facility charges.
Is this also, these rates are also defined by SEBI, or this is something which you can charge whatever you want?
No, that is determined by us, but then it has to be reasonable because there are all type of WPPs involved. So, have to ensure that, you know, they are able to pay at the end of it.
Okay. And what are the settlement charges?
Sorry, it's a standard fee across all entities. It's not that because somebody is bigger, we charge him larger fees for software maintenance. No, it's a software which is standard for all entities.
Okay. And what is the settlement charges business?
Settlement charges, what happens is we have clearing members accounts with us who have, we have these clearing member accounts with us. We charge them 500 rupees per month. So that totally comes down to about 6,000 rupees we charge per clearing member for settling their trades on the exchange. So basically, each clearing member has to open one account and I think two on BSE. So totally these three accounts are with us.
Sorry, each clearing member has to open how many accounts? I didn't ask the last part.
I think one with NSE, one with maybe MCX and...
Sir, depends on where he's member, sir.
If he's a member only of BSE, he has to open only one account for BSE. If he's a member of BSE and NSE, then one account. One account for each of the exchanges where he's a member.
Okay. And what are these account metrics charges?
That is the charge we levy on the corporate accounts, which is about 500 per year. Every year, 500.
And all these charges, whether you call it user facility charges or settlement charges or account, all these charges put together contribute around 2 to 3% to our overall revenue. Our main focus is on annual issuer charges, transaction charges, IPO corporate action, online data charges. These are our main focus area. These are all charges for which we provide various kind of ancillary services, and this keep on and it will continue to remain in this lines.
Okay. So this account maintenance charges is basically a subset of the annual issuer charges which you charge to corporates. A separate number. Right?
Correct.
Okay. This is how much you said? 500 rupees per year?
Per year, per corporate account.
Okay.
It is not charged for individuals.
Okay, I got it. Yeah. And this e-voting thing, what was the total revenue from e-voting or e-AGM? Do you also do e-AGM? I'm not too sure. So how much did you revenue from e-voting in FY21?
So I would request Girish sir to answer.
E-voting charges that we earned was around 6.5 crore during last year.
And this includes e-AGM or e-AGM is separate? Or do you do e-AGM?
Yes sir, we do e-AGM. It is nothing but doing AGM through video conferencing. So that is called e-AGM by us.
So that is part of e-voting or something else?
No, it is combined. Whatever sir has said in terms of amount, no?
It
includes
combined.
The typical e-voting as well as this EAG.
Okay. And this e-cash charges is basically the statement charges you send to accounts, right?
Yes.
This is, you charge to the individual or to the DP? How does it work?
DP.
Okay. This is how much per account?
We charge it to DPs as well as AMCs. For AMCs it is around, for DPs, for email it is around 50 paisa, and for physical it is 6 rupees to DPs and 2 rupees for AMCs, and around 30 paisa for email cash sent to AMCs.
Okay.
These are the standard rate charged by both the departments.
And this is, everybody has to ask for it. So if I am a holder with Zerodha, will I have to ask for an e-cash thing, or is the e-cash thing will automatically be default will be there?
Sir, it is a trigger-based event. So if you are having DMAT account and you are also having mutual funds in the statement of account format, that is the physical form, then there is a trigger mechanism which ensures that you get the e-cash or cash as the case may be, depending on the availability of your email ID, point number one. Point number two is that it is automatically triggered for all those people who are having this type of combination, because it's a trigger, self-trigger driven exercise. You as an investor can say, I don't want e-cash, by going to our link and saying no. So by default it is given to everybody, but somebody can say that I don't want this e-cash or I don't want cash. It is a reverse.
Okay. And last thing in this is, what is this document storage and inter KRA?
Yeah, we stored some physical documents. We were KRAs since 2007 for the mutual fund industry, and post that those documents were transferred to the KRA after the KRA regulations kicked in. And we continue to store those documents for the mutual fund industry. So we are charging those charges are being levied on the mutual funds for the physical documents which are actually stored by us. Earlier KYC required, there's a physical document we sent to the KRA, and the KRA had to store those physical documents.
It is for the old thing. New ones, there is no document storage. I mean, new accounts, there is no document storage. Okay, fair enough. Now, you know, you have around 900 crores of cash. How much money do you need to keep for regulatory needs? Some 200 crores, right?
For our regulatory requirement, we estimate around 350 crore for our regulatory need, which is required for net worth requirement. In addition to that, we also bid for government projects. There also we need to have net worth requirement prescribed by them. So, on an average, we see that this kind of net worth would be required for maintaining or putting in a bid for government projects.
Okay, okay. And so your dividend policy, I think you've paid around 50% of dividend profits as dividend in the last few years. So is there any range that you would like to save?
See, earlier, yeah, before two years, if you look at our dividend policy, it was 40%, and then we had to pay the DDT. Now, since 2 years, the dividend distribution tax has been abolished, and accordingly, we generally pay, our payout ratio is around 60% of our profits. So, if you look at our dividend this year, it is around 59 and some odd percentages. Last year also, it was around 59 and odd percent. So, that's our policy as of now.
And do you have any limit that, you know, once you have so much of cash, you will give all the cash as dividend? Anything of that sort?
So,
have you thought about?
As and when there is need felt, our board will take suitable decision. As of now, we don't have any such plans.
Okay. And have you ever debated about dividend versus buyback? Do you think buyback is better or dividend is better? Any thoughts which you have?
As of now, our board is comfortable with dividend. Okay. We'll see how in future, if any discussion is required, then our board will take suitable decision at that point in time. But I think after introduction of that buyback tax by central government, I think buyback would not be, it's not tax heavy. That is my personal view. Unless a company doesn't have a large share premium account, in their balance sheet, buyback is not advisable. Because when you have share premium account, your cost of acquisition of share would be much more higher. It would be almost near to your market price whenever you decide on buyback.
So I didn't understand this, sir. If you can kindly elaborate this.
So what the income tax rule requires, that whenever you have issued the shares, at that time, that price has to be considered and compared with the price at which you offer for buyback. The differential amount is taxed by and the company has to pay buyback tax on such differential amount. So if CDSL would have issued share at a premium, then the difference between the buyback price and the cost of acquisition that CDSL has issued the share would be minimal, and hence there will be negligible tax impact.
So if you're saying that, let's say today, I'll give you a practical example. Let's say there is a company called Info Edge, which has done a QIP at 3600 rupees. Okay. Mm-hmm. And today the share price is, let's say, 5000 rupees. So if I do a buyback at now, because it has done a QIP at 3600 rupees, there is a substantial amount of money in the share premium account. So now if I do a buyback at 5000 rupees, then the tax rate is only on the 5000 minus.
On the differential, yes, on the differential. And if this differential is negative, there will be no tax.
Okay. But if the same thing, let's say for you, I think all your shares will be issued at 10 rupees or whatever.
Yes.
Yes, the IPO, I think you didn't have any secondary sale, right? It was OFS only, right? So in your case, it is all 10 rupees, and hence it doesn't make sense.
Yes.
Okay. No, only one point in this is that even today, let's say 10 rupees also is there. The buyback tax is, if I'm not wrong, 20%, right?
I think it is around 20. it is at normal rate. I think 22, whatever is your tax rate plus cess and surcharge.
Okay.
So currently we are at 22%. So on 22% surcharge and cess.
Yeah, but
be around 25%.
Dividend today, if you're an individual shareholder and if you're above a 5 crore bracket or 2 crore bracket, it is on 35-40%.
Yes. Yes.
So there is still a gap, but I agree that you know the gap which was there quite a bit has significantly reduced. The gap is no longer, and plus I think it the only other time it makes sense is when you think your share price is depressed.
Yes.
You know, when you are less than a, let's say other income yield or whatever, you know, then, so let's say you're less than a 20p or a 15p kind of stock, then it, you're actually to be EPS accretive.
Yes.
Whereas if you're at a higher valuation, then it is not EPS accretive. So.
Yes.
So I agree to you that, but
I think removal of DDT has passed on the benefit to the shareholders, no? Because company is not paying DDT and most of the company has adopted that whatever we used to pay DDT will pass it on to the shareholders.
Correct. Lastly, we have some only four or five minutes left. Sir, if you can, there are these new businesses. One is, you do whatever you're currently doing. And, while you can say it's a forward-looking statement, in a way, but, is there any other thing which you think you can do or which you think is future growth avenues? You know, you've tried commodity. It has not worked very well. It's not scaled up very well as of now. Maybe it will in the future. Insurance is one big market, which is, I think you mentioned that LIC is still not, doesn't want to come into the fold or the regulation is not makes it compulsory. Then there is digital gold. Then there is, I don't know whether you're doing on anything on digital currency you can do in the future. DMAT of mutual fund units. So anything, you think, something which you think in the future can become, bigger or, property digitalization. So how is the organization looking at future growth? I'm not asking for any number or anything, but, how you are looking at future growth avenues?
Too early, it's very difficult to answer that question because again it's like making a forward looking statement. But we are looking at wherever there is physical paper involved, we are looking at digitizing that paper. So basically if you see most of our businesses are on the same lines, whether it is DMAT, we converted physical certificates into DMAT. Whether it is KYC, we converted physical KYC into electronic record. And we did a lot of other projects also. Same thing with e-insurance policies, where we converted e-policies into the electronic form, as well as NCCRL, where we converted warehouse receipts pertaining to commodities into the electronic form. So going forward, there is nothing which really stops us from getting into other lines of business where digitization is required. So I think our expertise basically lies in handling huge databases and handling large number of transactions and specifically and meeting deadlines so far as those transactions are concerned. So I think our expertise can always be put to use in any of the businesses what you have just talked about.
Okay. Do you see any traction in the insurance business? What is the key hindrance there? Is it regulation or is it what? If you can just elaborate.
Sir, presently in the insurance business, no? There is no mandate. It is not mandatory to hold policies in electronic form. Although there is a huge advantage for a policy holder to hold all the policies that he has across those types of policies and across the insurance company in the electronic form through one of the repositories, there is not much traction there as of date. Because there is no mandate from the regulator. That is one. Second thing is there is no momentum from the investors themselves, because the distributors of the insurance policies are also not pushing this aggressively, for the reason that they don't see much benefit in having this in the electronic form, because they tend to lose the touch points with the customers that they generally do in terms of giving the premium notice or any of those other, you know, documents at various points in time in the course of the year, and thereby stand a chance to get one more policy signed off from. So these are the couple of reasons why presently the volumes in insurance policies are not much, the electronic insurance policies.
Okay. And what is the listing you get on the, whether today the listing on dematting of the MF units? So does that help you? Because then it becomes just like a share for every holding, you will get that 4.5 rupees or whatever, you know, you get. Is there a traction on that front?
That's right. The same charges kick in.
Sir, for us, it is like any other security. So we have not really mapped as to whether person actively does mutual fund only, only securities or mutual funds and securities or only mutual funds. So it is like any other security. So we do equal in our IAPs, that is investor awareness programs and all, we do mention that it is best to have all the securities, including mutual funds, in one DMAT account. But the progress has been slow because many of the mutual fund holders do not operate through a broker or any such entity. Those who do operate have mutual fund policies in the electronic form. Those who do not operate through brokers or they don't have any interaction with the brokers, they continue to hold in the statement of account.
So, correct me, sir. Today, if I buy from Zerodha, let's say, a mutual fund, will it be a DMAT format or will it be a what format?
Sir, I wouldn't know about the way the platform of Zerodha is designed. But maybe he's giving a choice of holding it in the electronic form or in statement of form. I wouldn't know that.
Okay.
Because that is unique to the platform developed by Zerodha for his customers. Similarly, there could be a Upstox who is developed for his customers or many of the other N number of mutual fund distributors who are also dubbing up as brokers.
Okay. So it is basically the broker who will decide whether it's a DMAT format or not a DMAT format.
No. Whether to give a choice or not. Whether to have it in the DMAT form or statement of account form.
Okay, because when I buy directly from an HDFC mutual fund, there is no DMAT, right? I mean, I just get a...
That is what I'm saying. No. There also you have a choice of seeing whether you want the DMAT form or physical form. Even if you go to HDFC mutual fund site directly, you have a choice of seeing.
Okay.
But typically people don't use the choice of DMAT, but it is available.
Okay. So that's it, sir. Thank you for your time. It's really, really helpful. I got a lot of clarification which I had and were niggling in my mind. And I really appreciate you taking time out for this. Thank you very much for this.
Thanks a lot, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you,
sir. Thank you, Girish. Thank you, everybody. Sorry? Yeah. I'm just exiting the call, sir. Thank you.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, on behalf of Central Depository Services India Limited, that concludes this conference call. We thank you for joining us, and you may now disconnect your lines. Thank you.